Ecologists have blurred the distinction between the living and the non-living. Organisms alter the chemistry of the oceans and the composition of the atmosphere, and physical forces shape plant architecture and animal morphology. The question of animal, vegetable, or mineral can be tough to answer on the dunes of Cape Cod and the prairies of Wyoming. Walking the dunes means coming to know sand. Most fundamentally, it imposes a pace of movement in the world. As Henry David Thoreau noted, that soft sand was no place in which to be in a hurry, for 1 mile there was as good as two elsewhere. The sand of Cape Cod is ubiquitous, as inescapable as wind in Wyoming. And Thoreau's 2-to-1 ratio of effort on sand is about what I figure when biking into the wind around Laramie. It's tempting to fight against both sand and wind, as if pushing harder could assure victory rather than merely exhaustion. We might win local battles, such as the fenced yards of Provincetown, which held back what Thoreau termed the great enemy. And I've discovered a few calm sanctuaries in the windbreaks of cottonwoods and willows along the Laramie River. But in the end, sand and wind ally to define the landscape of Cape Cod, and to a deeply worrying extent, places on Wyoming's prairies, where drought-catalyzed blowouts have created beachheads of silt that echo the onset of the Dust Bowl. The capacity of sand to overrun human works has been largely a matter of our mismanagement of vegetation. Thoreau described how grazing, brush clearing, and plowing stripped the plants from the friable sand, and only the government's regulations and reclamation programs checked the dunes' advance. Cape Cod's shifting sand resembled a slow-motion wildfire consuming homes and schools. And in the West, we know that ecological mismanagement has led to devastating wildfires. Last summer, Laramie hosted hundreds of firefighters who battled a blaze in the mountains to our west. Thoreau's account of advancing sand could have served as a description of these fires. The sand had approached the harbor for an extent of 4.5 miles, and unless some measures were adopted to check its progress, it would destroy the harbor and town. Provincetown survived its early ecological transgressions. Some western towns weren't so fortunate. Sand and fire can wreak havoc, but they can also provide pleasure. There's nothing like the soft, warm sand on a cold morning on the Cape, or a crackling fire on a winter's night in Laramie. And this brings us to the other and perhaps most obvious doppelganger of sand, snow. Thoreau could have been marveling at snow rather than sand when he wrote, "It is so white and pure and level, and each slight inequality and track is so distinctly revealed." Our solution to both drifting sand and snow is the slatted fence, a stretch of thin, vertical boards linked by a series of horizontal wires stands just below our dune shack in a scene reminiscent of midwinter in Wyoming. A resident of Provincetown told Thoreau that the young ladies had a dexterous way of emptying their shoes at each step, which it would take a stranger a long time to learn. This maneuver sounds like the art of driving on snow, at least the aspects of graceful movement and a lengthy apprenticeship. For weeks, sand reminded me of my time on the dunes by trickling from shoes and backpacks. I can't swear that grains of sand are not still lurking between my toes. Thoreau wrote that when we reached Boston that October, I had a gill, that is a half cup, of Provincetown sand in my shoes, and at Concord there was still enough sand in my pages for many a day. I struggled for a parallel of a visit to Wyoming. Ashes and snowflakes rapidly disappear from a visitor's body. But at 7,200 feet above sea level, a Laramie visitor starts cranking out red blood cells upon arrival. These least animate of cells, really just tiny sacks of hemoglobin, diminish slowly. And perhaps a traveler to the Laramie Valley can't ever be entirely sure that the last blood cell formed during a stay is not still lurking.